Hey everybody, Michael Thiessen here for Liberty Coalition Canada, and today I get to speak with a very important student, Hannah Solomon-Vey. And Hannah is a student at Western University. She's in her fourth year. She's a courageous young woman, and it's wonderful to have you on with us, Hannah. Why don't you say hi to everybody?
Thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor.
So Hannah, why don't you describe your situation for us right now, what you're going through? And I'm sure that everybody is just assuming that we're going to be talking about these mandates and how they're affecting you as a student. But why don't you describe your situation as a student at Western right now?
Yes, so I am currently in the fourth year of my Bachelor of Music at Western. And, you know, like many people in university settings right now, some people are completely fine with these mandates. You know, they just hand in a piece of paper. They're fine with that. Doesn't mean anything to them. They go on with their life. For other people, that's different. And I was quite anxious this summer because I was worried that, you know, a mask mandate on my campus last year would lead to a vaccine mandate this year. And unfortunately, I was correct because I study history and I see that once people start gaining power and they start enjoying that, they don't want to let go of it. So I was concerned that my university would come down with a vaccine mandate, but of course they leave it to the absolute last second. So people do not have enough time to respond. So I wrote the dean of my department in June, asked her if there would be a vaccine mandate in September. She said, as of right now, no. She said she didn't think that they had the legal capacity and abilities as a university to mandate it. And I was like, you don't. Good. We're on the same page. You do not have the legal right to mandate the vaccine across campus. And then I can go into this in more detail later, but I also happened to bump into the president of my university on campus at the end of July. I asked him the same question. He said, no, we're not going to mandate it. We don't have the legal right to. We don't think so. And we don't want to get into legal troubles. And I was like, okay, we'll be good. And then I think it was the first week of August, the mandate came down, and it was like very, very little time to respond because I was already enrolled. I had chosen all my courses, all that type of thing. And I think they did this on purpose to put a lot of students out in the cold and not sure what to do.
So why don't we talk about that? Because you and I had a private conversation where we were just going to shoot a podcast and talk about you being a student and you being active on your campus. Mm-hmm. And it was right after you had that bump in with the president of your university and you felt quite positive. So why don't you tell us, who is the president of Western? Where were you when you bumped in to him, and how did the conversation go?
Yeah, it was very interesting. So my husband and I bumped into Alan Shepard, the president of Western, at the end of July. We were just out walking on campus. I happened to see him and I was like, I do not want to talk to him, but I have a question for him. So I will be brave and I'll ask him my question. So I introduced myself and said that I was a student at Western and I just wanted to know if Western would be mandating the vaccine. And his first response back was, you mean like Seneca, right? Because I was right after Seneca, which was the first university or college to bring down a vaccine mandate here in Ontario. That was right after Seneca had mandated the vaccine. And I said, yeah, like Seneca. And he's like, no, we're not going to do that. We do not believe we have the legal wherewithal and right as a university to mandate a vaccine like this. He said, we have mandated it in residence and we don't think we can go beyond that. And then he proceeded to ask my husband and I if we got the vaccine. And I told him that it was our private medical information. He was kind of taken aback by that. He kind of chilled off and then, you know, we said goodbye and we parted ways. So I am not usually one to believe secular authority figures anymore, but I had a tiny bit of hope after having that conversation with him because I wasn't emailing some secretary. I was actually talking to the president. And he had also said previous to our conversation in press conferences that Western was not going to go beyond mandating the vaccine in residence. I think, you know, mandating residence is not a good sign. It's, you know, they're constantly pushing to see how much they can get away with. So I was confident after that conversation that maybe, I could put my mind at rest and it wouldn't happen. But then a couple weeks later, the email and announcement came down from Western that they were going to be mandating it across campus.
It's interesting. You used three words that that pique my interest. You've used the word history. You said, I've read history. You've used the word secular when you're talking about leaders. You made reference to, I think you made reference to changes. And in all three, when you said those words, I had this question, like, what do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean by, I've read history. What do you mean by secular? What do you mean by the changes?
Well, I mean, when I say that I've read history, I was homeschooled, very, very proud to have been homeschooled. So my mother made a big goal of hers for my siblings and I to read real history, not historically revised history. So we read the history of the Anabaptists, of many Christians who were persecuted. We read what communism was like, what fascism was like. Also, my father and father-in-law escaped communism. So I've heard from their experiences of what it was like in the countries that they came from. So I'm very well aware of how communists behave. And my university has been very socialist, if not communist, for a while. Even last semester, one of the courses I took, we had to study communist American music. And it was not in a negative light whatsoever. It was extremely positive. And I was the only one in my classroom that raised any questions about communism. So at my university, we're seeing these socialist and communist policies in real time now. It's just, we're not just studying this stuff on paper, it's living out across campus that you have to align with the university's ideology or else. And I know I call the president of Western secular. That being said, everybody worships something. So, in this case, they worship power and control. And we're seeing this that at my university, they've made it extremely hard to get exemptions. I know so many students who have had their religious and medical exemptions denied. I decided to go the route of applying for an exemption, and I'm shocked I did get a religious exemption. However, I know so many people whose exemptions were denied, and I also know lots of students who didn't want to apply for exemptions because they didn't feel like they wanted to legitimize this whole process because you shouldn't need to ask for an exemption in the first place. But, in 5 days from now, the university is saying that anyone who has not received an exemption will be starting to get trespass notices and will eventually be fined under the student code of conduct and then basically thrown off of campus if they don't have an exemption.
So just to clarify, maybe a little bit of your terminology, when we're talking about secularists and worshiping somebody, it's not necessarily exactly the president of Western that we're talking about. We're talking about the general philosophy that might is right, that the elite rule, and then of course that just conveniently usually tilts its way into the elite ruling and enjoying their rule. How many students do you know of who have had their religious or medical exemptions denied?
So since I, well, just to backtrack to provide a bit of background for this. So since I started speaking out in July about the mandate or the coming mandates at universities, I did an interview with Children's Health Defense Canada. And for people who are not kind of in the know, in the community of, standing up for your rights and that type of thing, it's hard to find Children's Health Defense Canada on YouTube just because YouTube tries to censor it so much. So I was not expecting much to happen out of the interview. I did the interview with Dr. Panessi from Western. She was fired from Western for not wanting the vaccine. But when we did the interview, she was on faculty at Western from with a professor from University of Guelph and a few lawyers. So we did this whole panel talking about the university mandates. And then once that interview was over, a few days passed, and I started getting email after email after email of students, not only at Western, but other universities reaching out. And I can say I've never been so flooded with emails before, and I've done lots of different interviews, and I was just shocked how many students were very upset about this mandate. So I started a group for Western students, and it just started as a few of my friends that I knew, and it started to snowball and snowball. And now I have a group chat for Western students, and it's about 130 of us in there. I've stopped counting. There's probably more in there. So amongst those students that I personally know at Western in this group that don't want the vaccine, a bunch of them have applied for exemptions, and I would say there's at least 20 of them in there who have let me know that their exemption has been denied. So they're appealing it. Many of them have not heard back about their appeal. So we have 5 more days until that supposed iron fist comes down. I got another email about that today because Western doesn't seem to be registering in their system that I have approved exemption. However, they're saying, the 12th is coming around and that's your big doomsday if you don't have an approved exemption at Western.
So you would say 20 out of how many that applied? Like, are you the one exemption and the rest of them got all denied, or?
So I'm sure there's other students at Western who applied for exemptions that I don't know of, and they either got accepted or denied. But from the people that I know, more have gotten their exemption denied than accepted. And there's people who've independently done very similar wording and use very similar, Liberty Coalition Canada stuff. One got accepted, two got denied. Like, and there's no, it's extremely arbitrary. And this is the thing, because you have to send your exemption request to the Vaccine and Testing Center at Western, which is just this nameless bureaucratic body. There's no person responding back. So you don't know who is going through these things. And Western made it very clear they would be making it very hard to get exemptions at Western, and it's proved to be so.
Because that's what we want in Canada. It really hard for you to live with freedom because everybody's panicking still. Wow. So as you describe the situation, why don't you give us a description of how students are feeling? So you're talking to 130 students regularly. You have an exemption, so you're also seeing student life on campus. Are we seeing a bunch of happy students, or what are we seeing here? I know that I'm leading the witness here, but I am presuming that you're seeing a lot of stressed out people.
Yes, and I mean, it's very ironic. There are certain students on campus that have got the vaccine and they're too worried to go onto campus, so they want online learning. So there's those types of people that they're anxious, even though they've gotten the vaccine. But the people that I work with, the students that I am friends with and know, who for many different reasons do not want the vaccine, they've been put through the most unimaginable stress because Western has left it, like many other universities and colleges, right to before school starts, right when you've already enrolled in all your courses. And for the students that I know who have not submitted exemptions, they've already paid their tuition, right? And they don't know if they're going to get kicked out. And they also, if they get kicked out, they don't know if they're going to get their tuition reimbursed. And the thing with Western in particular, they just keep changing the goalposts all the time. So you have to do this, and then you have to do this, and then this changes, and then this changes. And even after the mandate came down, we didn't know how they would be enforcing it. We didn't know if we'd have to do testing as well, all those types of things. So we're on pins and needles, always waiting to see what's the new thing that's mandatory that we're going to have to do while we still have to focus on school and still be good students. So I have a lot of friends at Western who are incredibly stressed out, and they don't know what's going to happen, especially for the ones whose exemption has been denied or they chose not to submit one.
I want to press in on the fact that these universities waited till the last minute. I think they're all going to say, well, it's pretty clear the province made these mandates last minute and we responded. Just as an observer to your story, I will note that two people from the administration of Western acknowledged to you verbally and one in writing that they had sought legal counsel and that they did not believe that they had the legal ability to do this any further, which would mean that no matter what the province did, they would have a legal grounds to say, no, we're not going to do this as an institution. Furthermore, it does seem to just be so threatening. I just can't even imagine it. Like, you guys are the customers. Like, this is you would think that they would want to retain students. Canadian universities are not often rolling in money. They've got budget demands and they've got a future to think about. For them to be so cavalier with all of you and what almost like just a government body acting, like not thinking of themselves as servants to the student body, but thinking of themselves as this gatekeeper of information, and that you're so privileged that they're gonna, send you out reminders and throw you out on October 12th. It was October 12th, right? That's what you said.
Yes.
So do we have students like this is the civil rights movement, Hannah? Do we have students who are ready to go, like ready to go to class, ready to get thrown out, ready to get fined? Like
Yes. So, I
are
have
we
friends who,
organizing a huge protest on Western campus? Like, what's going on? Like, Or are we going to be Canadian and three of you are going to take the fire and everyone else is going to just comply?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I do have friends who, in some ways, I would say are more gutsy than I am, who have not sent in an exemption. They are enrolled. They're doing all their school and all that. And they continue. They plan to continue going to class. Like, we don't know if Western's actually going to put people at the door to make sure you can't come in. Even if they don't do that, they're going to start putting fines and, you know, sanctions on your student file at Western.
Yeah, your student file, your student, yeah.
Exactly. So they don't necessarily have to physically be there. They know who you are. And it's basically how they do the list is like whoever has not sent in proof of vaccination from amongst all the students, then they have you on this list. And then if you haven't sent in your exemption, then you're on another list and that type of thing. So it's extraordinary. There's thousands and thousands of students and faculty and staff at Western, and they've been able to get down to every single last person. You cannot escape their grip. And Western, as well as many other universities and colleges, brought down their mandate even before the province said that it should be mandatory. Because from my experience and what I've seen, that the health units, the local health units, are running everything. So the health unit was dictating before the mandate came down what Western should do in terms of, you know, contact tracing and masking and class size and all those things. And so they were the ones, Dr. Chris Mackey, the chief medical health officer of Middlesex London, he wrote a letter to Western saying the vaccine should be mandatory in residence. Western made it mandatory in residence. Then he sent a letter saying that Western should make it mandatory across campus. Then Western made it mandatory across campus. And from all the conversations that I hear from, you know, people on campus when I'm on there, including all the letters and emails I get from Western, basically Western just waits for what the health unit says they have to do, and then they do it. Otherwise, the health unit will shut them down, basically. So they're Western, you know, they're doing what they want to do, but at the end of the day, the local health unit that's calling the shots, and Western is just waiting for new directives all the time. And I'm a president of a club on campus, so I get directives as a president of a club from the student union. And so every time I ask the student union the question, what can we do, what can we not do, they're always saying we have to wait for further direction from the health unit. And so the health unit controls everything, and they're not exactly lovers of freedom.
Potentially the understatement of the week with the week that we've had. Hannah making the understatement of the week. So, you know, you've mentioned that you're a homeschooler. You've mentioned secularism and that you had read about, you know, the Anabaptists. So I'm presuming you have a Christian worldview.
Yes.
And what do you think the church should do?
This is the thing. The church, unfortunately, the rot that we are seeing right now in the church is proven to be very deep. And when masks were made mandatory last year and churches were told to, you know, shut down, we have to go online, all that type of thing, so many churches, looks like they didn't study history, and so many of the pastors, unfortunately, their favorite passage in the Bible is Romans 13, a very inaccurate understanding of it. So they're like, we have to shut down. And that was the majority of churches at the beginning. I understand the first time around when we have a first lockdown, no one knows what's going on. That's understandable. But then the second time and the third time around. So unfortunately, the church here in Canada has tremendously capitulated to the government. Thankfully, there are some churches who are standing up, and there are courageous Christians who have flocked to those churches, my church being one of them, that I'm very thankful to be part of. And so there are these small pockets of light amongst the church in Canada that is helping students to be strong during this time and not give in. Because I am used to fighting against injustices, and this is something that I'm very familiar with. However, even with someone like myself, it does get you. It's just like, you know, some days you think maybe I should just get the vaccine and they'll just leave me alone. Like, it just, the amount of psychological warfare that people who do not want the vaccine or are against the mandates, the amount of psychological warfare that they're going through is unbelievable. It's so abusive, and they just want to wear you down. So unfortunately, I know Christian students at Western who went to my previous church and who said they never wanted the vaccine. They didn't want to be coerced into it, and they eventually gave in and they got it. That's their choice. However, they took the vaccine under extreme stress and duress. So when it comes to the church needs to be standing up and saying, no, the state has swallowed up practically everything. The state needs to be put back in its spot. And here in Canada, like, you would think the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the Constitution do not even exist anymore. Like, they are some nice letters on paper and that's it. Every single time, you know, Western is, you know, talking about their new mandates, they're saying, we consulted, these constitutional experts, and they say that, mandating the vaccine is not a violation of people's rights because they can choose not to take it, but then you can't do anything in life if you don't take it, right? So they have their own select interpretations of these documents because they don't understand the biblical worldview. And if Christians would understand that our nation was founded on biblical principles and understanding of the sovereignty of God and how our rights and freedoms have to be protected because we are meant to be free citizens under God, we wouldn't be in this place today. So there's lots of rot that's happened in the church here in Canada, but I still think that there is time for people to wake up and realize this has gone too far. However, when things are barreling so fast like this and so many mandates are coming down and they seem so permanent, it does look dark. Like, can these things actually be overturned? We've given up so much ground.
So you're a younger person, and that's fantastic. You're young, married, and cultured and read. I want to follow up with this question because just last night I listened to a sermon of the from someone who is the regional director of one of the larger denominations or larger networks of churches. I listened to a sermon from him where he literally says that to keep living on mission, that requires us to take risk. And then his interpretation of risk is, and that requires us to give up our rights and freedoms. Requires us to be like Paul, and he summarized the entire life of Paul into a very small caricature, where he summarized Paul into he never fought for his rights. Like, he went to jail. We're now 2 years into this almost, so we're 19 months in. I would have never imagined after the first wave that pastors would still be saying this same type of thing. But as a young Christian who doesn't have her doctorate in theology and philosophy and everything like this, you're an activist, so what would your response be to that saged pastor who is still saying that it is not a biblical practice to stand up for justice and for justice of when it's concerning you?
Right. I mean, I would ask him what a biblical understanding of justice looks like in his worldview. What does he think the Bible says that true justice is? How do we know what true justice is? And how do we live out true justice in society? Because I don't want to make assumptions, but I would think that, many of his responses would be, he's probably pro-abortion, probably pro-homosexuality, probably pro all these different types of forms of bondage. And when people are living in bondage in one place in their life, they're going to be pro bondage in other places.
So no,
Also,
I'll you mean like you based upon that statement that I just made, you would think that he would be pro-abortion and
yes, pro all those other things, yes.
okay, so what if I told you that he's not?
Well, I mean,
Because this is it's
right.
interesting, Hannah. This is a
Exactly.
world that we're living in. This is a world that we're living in. You and I would have great agreement with many of the churches that you describe with the word rot.
Yes.
We would have great disagreement with 2 years ago with what we would call mainline churches that we would just said they're dead and they're gone. We wouldn't even define them as churches anymore. They don't uphold scripture in any way. But now the man that I just described for you would agree with you on virtually all of those issues that you just landed.
Yeah, so obviously there's churches that are on the extreme end of leftism who are completely fine with the government taking things over. And then there's also extremely conservative churches. Like you said, that's the previous church that my husband and I came out from. They were, I don't use the term hell-bent, but they were hell-bent on pleasing the government no matter what. Absolutely anything the government says, they would go above and beyond. And they went above and beyond the bylaw when it came to masks. And my husband and I had many conversations with the pastor and the elders, and many emails, in-person conversations, those types of things. And whether they realize it or not, like people who are in that type of position, they fear man. They fear man more than they fear God. And I think for many people in the Canadian church, they have never lived through persecution. And unfortunately, the devil has inserted this very powerful lie that it's not persecution unless you are being your head's being chopped off or you're rotting in jail, right? So this deceptive lie that you don't realize that it's persecution when you cannot go to church and that Zoom church is not a correct option. And so these types of lies have been given by the devil, and so many Christians have fallen for it. So to a pastor like that, I would say that we have to have a biblical understanding of the relationship between church and state. Understand that there's roles that God has given to the state, and there's roles that God has given to the church, and roles to the family. And once the state starts swallowing up the role of the family and the church and pastors have the responsibility to say no farther. You cannot go any farther. This is our sphere. We have been, by God, pastors have been given this role in this sphere over the church. And once the government takes it over, they cannot go any farther. But it's a hard thing to do. And you will not look very popular in society. And unfortunately, being popular, getting a salary, all those types of things, that matters more to some people than actually standing up for what's right. And these things cost. And you're going to get hate mail. People are going to be leaving your church. But if you stand up for what's right, you'll be overwhelmed by the amount of people who will be coming to your church, because there are so many Christians who are desperate for someone to stand up for what's right. And so many Christians have been hurt by their pastor capitulating to this and valuing his salary and his, name in the community versus what's right.
I want to point out what you started with there. I do think that the linchpin to this conversation is what do you understand as biblical justice? Because I've been so disappointed with the men of my vintage who would agree with me on 90% of things and even do agree with me on most of these mandates, but just will not push back. Now, it is a great source of coercion. It is a great source of difficulty. It is difficult to be threatened and to have your name,
Yes.
maligned as being reckless. But I find it interesting that I described somebody who would agree with you and I on virtually everything. And when I gave you a description on how he exposited the life of the Apostle Paul, you assumed it was a raving liberal. And so I'll just say that to all my friends. That's what the younger generation is thinking about you. When we describe you, they don't go, "These are the pastors of old who we trusted with our lives." They go, "Oh, no, that's a raving liberal." And then you go, "No, it's not." And then it causes confusion. So, Hannah, that's probably going to get me in a lot of trouble for asking that question, but I wanted to go into that because just yesterday, again, I've got a young female student at Western saying, "I'm trying to stand up for justice. I'm trying to combat someone who would look me in the eyes and say, 'We're not doing it. It's not legal.' And 3 weeks later, changing our minds. And somehow Christians being hindered from saying, 'Wait, that's problematic. You lied. You told me it's unlawful, and now you're still doing it anyways.' And somehow it's not on mission to get clarity and to stand up for justice in those areas. And particularly, I'm sure you've had the opportunity I have had to share the gospel all the way through, because that's actually what happens when you
Absolutely.
Confront people of sin. When you look at the
Absolutely.
President in the eye and you call him a liar, if you can get him to admit that he's a liar, you get to also say, "Do you know that Jesus died for your lying? And therefore you can have forgiveness." But if we never say that you're a liar and we just go into our hole, then the gospel actually isn't proclaimed. We have this great desire for the gospel to go out, but we don't want to do it in any context that would cause an actual rift. But on that point of causing a rift, have you received hate mail?
Okay, so in terms of hate mail, it's more if I comment on Western's announcement. So when I commented on Western's Instagram and Facebook posts when they brought down the mandate, I said basically how inclusive of Western, hashtag discrimination 101. Then immediately on Instagram, so many people that I know at Western started going at me, and classmates, including a girl who I know in music who has a Bible verse in her Instagram bio, but I don't think she reads the Bible. You know, she called me a bigot for advocating for medical freedom and all these different types of things. Some people have been extremely offensive to me on social media and DMing me. However, I've been quite amazed. The majority, 99% of the emails and messages and calls that I've gotten from people are people who are in dire straits right now, who do not know what to do, and who've never really, in many cases, have stood up for a lot in their life. But they're like, no, this has gone too far. I don't know what to do. I'm new at this. How do I figure things out? So I've been overwhelmed. Thankfully, I've been able to share the load with Dr. Panesse at Western, another PhD student who started the petition to stop the mandate at Western. He's been incredibly amazing. I mean, his parents escaped communism, so he knows what it's like. And I've actually friends with a lot of Polish students at Western who don't want the vaccine because their families escaped communism. So the majority of the responses have been people who are, you know, supportive of me standing against the mandates and are asking for help. And just the community that we've been able to form, because last year when I was at Western and I didn't want to wear a mask and tried to get an exemption for that, I was the only person that I knew at Western who didn't want to wear a mask. And I was like, I hope I'm not the only one around, you know, next time this year who doesn't want the vaccine. And sure enough, I'm absolutely not alone. And it's been amazing to be able to bring these students together to know they're not alone. So I've been able to connect students to the representatives at their various campuses. And I'm friends with this amazing student at U of T, and he started a humongous group over there of students who don't want the vaccine. And I've had students message me from U of T, and they're like, I think I'm the only one on campus who doesn't want this and who's upset about it. And I'm like, no, you're not. Here's a group of U of T students in particular who don't want the vaccine. They've been able to stand together and petition. They've been able to do news conferences and have articles published about them, you know, contact lawyers. I also know a lot of students who are plaintiffs on a legal case right now about this. So unfortunately, it takes time, right? We don't even know how these cases are going to transpire. And these people's real world lives right now, where they don't even know if they can finish this year of school and what's going to happen to their tuition and all those types of things.
Okay, so I want to give you a piece of information, and then I want to ask you a follow-up question. So first of all, are you aware that Liberty Coalition Canada, we just announced with James Kitchen that we are going to be suing an Ontario university soon?
No, I usually up to date on things, but no, I did not know this.
So we just announced that last week. We are in the process of finding litigants. And I know that we've heard from every school you've named, we've heard of students. And I can't wait to completely unveil where we're going. Yes. and who we're going. Because again, you're the second university student slash faculty member that I've spoken to who literally says, we were told that this was unlawful, and then all of that went away. My concern for the next step is, we're hearing now everything resounding around don't go to your family if you have an unvaccinated child, everybody sit outside or be inside with masks. And so you know, the messaging has changed from get vaccinated to be safe to get vaccinated to keep the elderly safe to get vaccinated to keep children safe who aren't able to get vaccinated. And then you and I can just feel the messaging changing. Hurrah! We can now get those children vaccinated, because we've watched the vaccine for like 17 more minutes. It's been 17 minutes and we've watched it. Now we get full approval. So we're kind of concerned about the progression, and mm-hmm. and now we're going all the way to children. I want to ask you a question about this, because for me, I am philosophically against the coercion.
Yes.
When anybody would say, I want to rush to get something into every age bracket, ignoring many of the safeguards that we previously endorsed, you can push that on 40-year-olds. You can push that on late 30-year-olds who have already had their kids. But the moment you start pushing that on pregnant women, younger women, young men, I'm getting really deeply concerned just at the coercion. If I hadn't read another article, it would be like, wait, experimental and on young people. Okay. Not that my life isn't as much value as a young person, but you know, if something were to happen, my kids have been born and I'm, you know. So as a young person, would you mind sharing why you are hesitant by your conscience to take a vaccine at this time?
So for me personally, I would say the number one thing is the reason why I'm hesitant is because the government does not have the right to mandate what I inject in my body and what medical experiment I have to be part of in order to participate in society again. That fundamentally is the principle. The government doesn't have the right to do that, and they have exceeded all of their authority in our society right now. Second of all, it's, as you mentioned, it's a brand new vaccine. It's not gone through the amount of testing that normal vaccines go through. Normal vaccines go through to 10 to 15 years of being tested and to make sure that they are effective, that they're safe, that they're not gonna have terrible adverse reactions. Right now, everybody who's taking the vaccine, they are part of the medical experiment. They are the guinea pig, if you want to say, in this whole process. And throughout history, we've seen different medical procedures that have been prescribed for people or different drugs. They've had very adverse reactions, but it's happened after they took it, and then they have lifelong damages to deal with. And if you have an adverse reaction from this vaccine, there's nobody that you can sue. You cannot sue your school, you cannot sue your employer, you cannot sue the vaccine manufacturer, you cannot sue the government. Maybe you could get a bit of assistance from the government if you're, on sick leave from work or something like that. I don't know how that would work. But basically, you're the one left holding the bag. Everything is on you. And so if I don't take the vaccine but can't participate in society, the government will say, that's on me, that's my choice. But if I take it and I'm injured, the government will also tell me that it was my choice and that I also had the choice not to take it. But I mean, I couldn't participate in society. So they're gonna get me either way. And so for me personally, those are the two main things. Also because aborted fetal cells have been used in the testing and production. And as a pro-life person who believes in the sanctity and dignity of human life from conception or fertilization to natural death, I am not comfortable taking a vaccine that has had aborted fetal cells used in its testing and production. And I mean, when it comes to adverse reactions, there is very, mixed messaging on whether it affects women's, fertility, ability to get pregnant, that type of thing. I want to be able to have a family. That's something that I, I'm very focused on, and I don't want to take something that could have these negative effects. And we're seeing lots of women having lots of challenges in their life afterwards. And now they're studying if there's a correlation between the vaccine and having women's cycles being all messed up, but it's always after the fact. After the fact, right? And throughout history, when people are living in a time of human rights abuses, it's hard to see it when you're in that time. It's always after the fact. People are like, oh my goodness, how did that happen? It's happening right now.
Yeah, it happens because people live with a lack of moral gumption and a lack of moral backbone, and they forget the hard-fought freedom wars that have happened. Now, we've got 4 minutes left. I want to make a quick comment, and then I want to go back to something you just brought up. So all the way back to the persecution thing, it just reminded me. It's interesting that all of these Christian leaders are saying, it's not persecution until. But you don't say to the kid who just got punched in the face, "Oh well, at least they didn't break your arm." Like, suck it up. They didn't break your arm. Or you don't say to a rape victim, "Well, at least they didn't cut off your finger." Like, that's how asinine this situation is. Like, of course, there are levels of difficulty for people. But to say that this is just light and this is and to always be comparative, it's not helpful. To always be comparative of the most extreme circumstances in order to deny the current reality. And so I did want to just bring that up because it was a good point that you brought out of the conversation. Now, to wrap things up, how is it possible, Hannah, and this is a pretty sincere question, how is it possible that you can be pro-choice regarding the vaccine and anti-choice regarding life? And I am using our enemy's language against us. But look, I'll tell you right now, I've been on the stage in a number of rallies where people have started "My Body, My Choice," and I cringe every time because I just want to go up to the podium and say, "My body, my choice includes the unborn." So as a young woman who is living in this realm of abortion and its popularity on campus, and someone who's younger than me and female, how do you describe what seems to many people as an anomaly? Like, how can you be pro-choice with the vaccine and then demand that women have babies?
It's a very good question. So, and I mean, I'm the president of a pro-life club and I do pro-life activism and I talk with pro-choicers every week. So this is not something that they brought up to me in conversation. However, I know this is something that people will try to use to refute the argument because it's fascinating. Many pro-choice people when it comes to abortion are not pro-choice when it comes to vaccines. They're pro-government mandating vaccine. So I would say they're pro anything wrong. But anyway, so when it comes to abortion versus vaccines, when it comes to having an abortion procedure, you are choosing to end the life of a fetus, which is a growing human inside of you. And so when it comes to abortion, we do not have the right to end an innocent human being's life who is growing inside of us. So when a woman is pregnant, when she has an abortion procedure, it's not it's a procedure that's done in her body, but her life is not ended. The life of her child inside of her is ended. And so if we're about protecting human life, and for many people who are pro-vaccine, they say you have to take the vaccine because you don't want to harm someone else, then with that same logic, then we also have to be against abortion because we do not want to end an innocent human being's life. If someone doesn't take a vaccine, they are not going to naturally be a spreader of a certain disease and harm everyone around them. That is absolute logical fallacy. Most people, when they're sick, they stay home and everything is fine. And getting sick is not a crime. And if you accidentally make someone else sick, that's not a crime. You're strengthening your immune system because you got sick and their immune system will be strengthened. And if they have a vaccine for something, you cannot infect them with that virus.
I think it's great that you brought that up. Just so everybody understands, there's a very simple, easy way to understand that a preborn child is a child. You just have to remember the acronym SLED: size, level of development. What's the E?
Environment
and
degree of dependency.
Degree of dependency. Thank you, Hannah. I knew you would get them all. None of those things make you less human. So if you're a big person or a small person, it doesn't make you less human if you're big or small. Level of development, there are people who have learning delays. There are people who have they're teenagers and they can't think right, because I have a few of those. Their level of development isn't that fantastic. So that doesn't make them less human. Your environment, whether I'm standing in my room or I'm standing on the lawn or I'm standing inside of my mother's womb, does not make me less human. Level of dependency, neither makes me more or less human. So I'll actually give you an example. I have a wonderful, beautiful Asian adopted girl, my beautiful daughter, and we have medical procedures we have to go through every single day with her. And I get to remember how much of a treasure her life is, because if we weren't doing these procedures, she would most likely get infection and die. So that's an easy way to remember. And then Hannah, to your point about freedom of choice and versus limits to choice. Again, there is that age-old illustration of I can swing my fists right up until your nose. You know, if I'm just walking around and I'm, you know, practicing my Rocky, I'm listening to Eye of the Tiger, you know, that's all fine, totally free. I just can't come up and punch you in the nose for no reason. And that is, again, where generally, when we're talking about bodily autonomy, we protect bodily autonomy. We have freedom of our movement and mobility and conscience and all of these types of things. But that is limited to a woman who has a child inside her, because that child also has bodily autonomy.
Exactly.
And so that's particularly why, ironically, the vaccination of pregnant women at this time with an experimental drug is significantly egregious. It's just awful what's 100%. Going on. Anyways, Hannah, it's been really good chatting with you. I thank you for your time. And I just want to say, I want you to keep fighting and keep proclaiming the gospel and keep telling people about justice. So thank you for doing that at Western. And we'll be praying that the Lord will bless you. And if there's anything that Liberty Coalition Canada can do to support you, you reach out and let me know. For our listeners, please go give Hannah a 5-star rating on Podbean or iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get our podcasts, or on our Rumble station. Give us a Rumble there and make sure you share with your friends and subscribe to our channel. We're just trying to get good eyewitness accounts out. And so this is what's going on in our Canadian universities. Students are being threatened. Perfectly healthy students with great immune systems are getting thrown off university campuses because the intellects are thinking so deeply that they're ready to toss the next generation of professionals and leaders off their campuses. Hannah, thanks for coming. Thanks for being here.
It was an honor.
And everybody, Godspeed as you fight for liberty.
Thanks for tuning in to this Liberty Coalition Canada interview, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.